It didn't start with women, and it didn't start with men. It began much earlier as a simple instruction, a directive planted deep in the cultural mind. Be empowered, be independent. But this message carried a hidden payload. It quietly taught that strength required detachment, that empowerment meant rejecting partnership. What followed wasn't liberation. It was the blueprint for a war between the sexes. This conflict was never accidental. It was engineered. And it all started with one corrosive idea. This idea was the payload. It wasn't just a concept. It was a piece of social code. A virus designed to rewrite the operating system of human connection. It began by targeting the relationship between men and women. It didn't attack them violently. It infected them quietly through repetition. It slowly redefined their core programming. Cooperation was relabeled as dependency. Trust was reframed as naivety. Interdependence was rewritten as oppression. This wasn't an organic evolution. It was a deliberate, calculated fragmentation of the social fabric. If this feels familiar, that's because you are living inside the system it built. A system where everyone is an individual, but no one is a partner. This is the Great Divide, and this division was born from pain. It took legitimate grievances and weaponized them. It took real frustrations and amplified them, giving people a target, but the target was wrong. It directed the pain of women against men and the frustration of men against women. This is the core of the mechanism. Because when people are divided, they are controllable. When they are in conflict, they are predictable. They seek solutions in products, not in each other. They build identities around consumption, not connection. In simple terms, isolated, angry people are the perfect consumers. This entire gender war isn't a cultural shift. It is a business model, a system that profits from your loneliness. But to make this division permanent, the system had to do something critical. It had to designate a permanent villain, which leads us to how they inverted the blame. To make the division permanent, the system needed a story, and every story requires a villain. Masculinity was cast in that role. The mechanism for this was systematic linguistic corruption. It wasn't a critique, it was a pathologizing. It took the core traits of masculine energy and redefined them as toxic. The instinct to protect was reframed as aggression. The drive to build was labeled oppressive. Leadership was twisted into control. Stoicism was diagnosed as emotional unavailability. Even the desire to provide was painted as a tool of financial enslavement. This inversion was precise. It was designed to make men the source of the world's pain. It taught an entire generation to be suspicious of strength, to see stability as a trap, and to view the protector as the primary threat. The consequences of this were catastrophic. For men, it led to a profound internal conflict, a deep sense of guilt for their own nature. They were told that to be good, they must be less of what they are. This created confusion, diffusion, and a crisis of purpose. In practice, this looks like a man who's afraid to lead, afraid to protect, afraid to even be. For women, the consequences were just as severe. They were handed a justified resentment. They were armed with a narrative that validated their anger. But this anger was directed at a phantom. It wasn't directed at the system that caused the pain. It was aimed at the men in their lives. This engineered anger was given a name. It was called empowerment, but it was the fuel for a rebellion, not against oppression, but against connection itself. This rebellion against connection was sold as the final stage of liberation. It's critical to understand the original fight for equal rights was just. It was necessary. But that movement was hijacked. The original goal, parity, was subtly replaced with a new one, supremacy. The message shifted from, I am your equal, to I don't need you. This became a performance of independence, a performance of detachment. It demanded that women prove their strength, not by building with men, but by building against them. The cause was no longer about shared progress, it was about individual survival. If you've ever felt that being independent also made you feel isolated, that is the paradox. This wasn't a movement toward freedom. It was a movement toward emotional self-exile. It was a strategic redirection of feminine energy, away from partnership and toward the self. This wasn't empowerment, it was conscription. The final outcome of this rebellion wasn't power, it was exhaustion. It placed an impossible burden on women to be everything all at once and all alone, to be the provider and the nurturer, to be the warrior and the lover, to be hard in the world but soft at home, with no one to share the load. This is the part most people get wrong. The performance of invulnerability leaves no room for human connection. It leaves no space for the softness that trust requires. In simpler terms, you cannot be in a state of defense and a state of connection at the same time. The strong, independent woman became the icon. She was celebrated for her achievements, but she was suffering privately from a profound, deep loneliness, a loneliness that was mandated by the very narrative that promised to free her. This isn't an accident. This division serves a purpose, which leads us to the enemy who built this system. This synthetic hatred between men and women is a precision tool. The animosity you are encouraged to feel is real, but its target is a deliberate misdirection. Men are not the natural enemy of women. Women are not the natural enemy of men. They are simply the assigned scapegoats. The actual enemy, the system that profits from this conflict, prefers to remain unseen. It operates on the oldest rule of power, divide and conquer. Because isolated individuals are manageable, insecure, lonely people are the perfect consumers. They seek identity in brands, not in bonds. If you've ever felt that modern life makes connection feel impossible, that is by design. This system monetizes your isolation. It sells you the dating app that promises connection while profiting from your continued searching. It sells you the self-help guide to cope with the anxiety it creates. It sells you the lifestyle of the self as a replacement for the we. Your pain is not a problem to be solved. It is a resource to be harvested. The architects of this division are not hidden. They are the boardrooms that approve marketing campaigns, campaigns that sell liberation in the form of a product. They are the media algorithms that feed on outrage. Think of the news cycles, the social media trends. Conflict gets clicks, war drives engagement, the toxic masculinity narrative is profitable, the failed modern woman narrative is profitable. The system finds the fault lines in our shared humanity and drills into them. It creates a feedback loop of mutual resentment. It doesn't care about your happiness, it only cares about your attention. This isn't a grand conspiracy. It is simple, impersonal economics, a machine that runs on one specific fuel, the complete erosion and death of partnership. This erosion of partnership was the primary goal. It dissolved the fundamental unit of human society. For generations, partnership was the default. It wasn't just romance, it was the mechanism of survival. It was built on a foundation of specialization and mutual unspoken trust. But the engineered narrative attacked this foundation directly. It replaced cooperation with competition. It reframed the relationship not as a sanctuary, but as a marketplace. In this new model, love is no longer about connection. It is about leverage. Dating is a transaction. Marriage is a contract. Every interaction is measured. Calculated. What do you bring to the table? This isn't partnership. This is emotional accounting. If you've ever felt like you're in a constant negotiation, even with the person you love, that is the system at work. It is the death of the we. It is the coronation of the me. The primary symptom of this new model is a profound, pervasive distrust, a deep, systemic coldness. Men and women are taught to view each other as potential adversaries, or at best, as temporary assets. This creates a constant low-level fear of vulnerability. Because in this new system, to be vulnerable is to give the other person power. To trust is to risk emotional bankruptcy. This is why modern relationships feel so brittle, so fragile. The root cause is the narrative's greatest lie, that needing someone is weakness, that relying on another human being is a failure of independence. So both sides remain guarded, armored. They refuse to truly commit, emotionally or logistically. They keep one foot out the door, ready to flee. This isn't freedom. It's a prison built for two. A cold war fought in the silence of a shared home, and this cold war needed a steady supply of propaganda to keep it going. This propaganda was effective because it did not feel like propaganda. It felt like entertainment. The mechanism was simple. Repetition. If you tell a lie often enough, it becomes the default truth. This narrative was injected into the cultural bloodstream through every available channel. It was the central theme of television shows, where the father was always the fool and the mother was always the competent savior. It was the plot of movies, where a woman's strength was demonstrated by her rejection of a man. It was the subtext of news reports, the bias in university lectures, and the assumed truth in talk shows. This constant passive absorption is not education. It is hypnosis. It teaches you what to feel before you even have a chance to think. It didn't ask for your opinion. It told you the correct one. In simpler terms, it wasn't a discussion. It was a script handed to an entire generation, a script where the roles were already cast. The hero and the villain, the empowered and the oppressor, a script that left no room for the complexity of real human beings. The impact of this relentless narrative was the creation of gendered empathy. It programmed us to instantly identify with the perceived victim and instantly condemn the perceived aggressor. It trained our brains to see conflict in every interaction. This broke the natural human capacity for mutual understanding. Then, the modern algorithm accelerated this process to an impossible speed. Social media became the perfect delivery system for this poison. The algorithm doesn't care about truth. It only cares about engagement. And nothing is more engaging than righteous anger. If this feels familiar, it's the echo chamber. The system identifies your resentment and feeds it. It finds your pain and validates it, while simultaneously showing you who to blame. It creates a digital reality where the other side is not just wrong, they are monstrous. This is the machine at full power. It's an echo chamber of blame, reinforcing the division 24/7. This constant external war eventually created a new internal one, which leads to the most tragic consequence of all, the war a woman must fight against herself. The most profound casualty of this narrative was not the relationship between men and women. It was the relationship a woman has with herself. This created an internal civil war. The system taught her that to be valuable, she must adopt the traits of the masculine. She must be assertive, competitive, thick-skinned, and relentless. But it simultaneously taught her, through the inversion of blame, that those very traits are toxic. This is the impossible contradiction. She is told to be a warrior, but also told that the warrior is the villain. This is the part most people get wrong. She was programmed to reject softness, to see nurturing as weakness, to see empathy as a liability, to see trust as a fatal flaw. This creates a deep, agonizing split in her own identity. She begins to despise the parts of herself that are fundamentally feminine. She is at war with her own nature. If you have ever felt exhausted by the constant performance of being strong, this is the source. It is the internal fragmentation, the constant battle between her programming and her instinct. This internal conflict manifests as pure performance. She must act strong. She must appear independent. She must project an image of having it all together, all the time. This is the exhaustion we spoke of. It is the energy it takes to hold up this mask. A mask that denies half of her own being. A mask that makes genuine connection impossible. She looks in the mirror and doesn't see a person. She sees a project that is never finished. She sees a list of flaws to be corrected. She sees the weakness she was taught to hate. This is the core of the tragedy. The narrative didn't just break the bond between sexes. It shattered her reflection. It broke her sense of self. She's left fragmented, performing a role she never auditioned for, told she is liberated while feeling trapped inside her own armor. This new armored world created a profound vacuum. And the men, they responded to this rejection in the only logical way they could. They went silent. This silence is not apathy. It is not weakness. It is a calculated, logical retreat. It is the only sane response to an unwinnable game. The system created an impossible double bind. If a man embodied the core masculine traits, to lead, protect, or provide, he was defined as toxic and punished for his nature. If he adapted, softened, and retreated from those traits, he was defined as weak and punished for his compliance. This is the punição pela adaptação. He was attacked for being what he was and despised for becoming what he was told to be. There was no right answer. In practice, this looks like a man who simply stops trying. He stops initiating. He stops competing for a partner. He stops engaging in the debate. Not because he doesn't care, but because he realized the game is rigged. Every action is scrutinized. Every motive suspected. So he chose the only safe move on the board. He removed his pieces from the game. This wasn't an act of aggression. It was an act of quiet self-preservation. This withdrawal is the great emotional disappearance. It is not just a social retreat. It is an internal one. Men disengaged. They turned their energy inward or toward things they could control. Their work, their craft, the gym, their own mission. They began building their own worlds, parallel to the social one that had rejected them. This is the man who still functions but no longer connects. He provides, but he does not invest. He is present, but he is not available. If you've ever felt a profound absence in the men around you, a sense of being checked out, this is the cause. The system demanded they be less of a man. They complied by becoming less of a partner. This created the exact void the narrative claimed to be fighting. A colder, harsher world, missing its anchor. This silence is the final symptom of the divide. But this artificial state, built on a foundation of lies, cannot last. Which brings us to the final stage, the reckoning. But every artificial system has a fatal flaw. It is, by its nature, unsustainable. A lie built on division eventually consumes itself. And that is the stage we are in now. The reckoning. The exhaustion has become too profound. The loneliness has become too cold. The performance of strength has collapsed under its own weight. This is the moment of clarity. The moment when the programming begins to crack. Women are realizing that this empowerment left them isolated. Men are realizing that their silence did not bring them peace. Both sides are looking at the ruins of partnership and finally asking the right question. Not who did this to me, but why did I believe this was winning? The core lie of the narrative that the other side is the enemy is expiring. Because the pain of the division has finally become greater than the engineered anger. This is the great revelation that ends the war. The man is not your enemy. The woman is not your enemy. They were never the architects of your pain. Her programmed rebellion and his silent retreat were not attacks on each other. They were shared symptoms of the same infection. Both were casualties of the same psychological operation. The system that profited from this divide is the only antagonist. It weaponized her pain against him. It used his nature as a cage to trap him. If this feels familiar, this is the moment your programming breaks. The resentment you were taught to feel can finally dissolve. It wasn't real. It was manufactured. The war ends not with a final battle. It ends when both sides simply look up, identify the real enemy, and set their weapons down. The solution, then, is not to build a new system. It is to return to the fundamental, ancient truth. The truth that harmony is not a negotiation. It is the default state. Men and women are not competitors. They are counterparts, a biological and spiritual polarity that creates the world. The path forward is not a new ideology. It is the simple, terrifying courage to trust again, to dismantle the armor, to end the performance, to see the human being behind the programming. The Great Divide was only ever a story, and now that story is over. The silence can end. The rebellion is finished. This is not a victory. It is a homecoming. A